trafficking in the Mesoamerican corridor, a threat to regional and human security. And my colleagues and I wanted to organize a conference around this topic for several reasons. As you know, the Mesoamerican corridor has long facilitated the illegal movement of drugs north to the United States and arms south from the United States to Mexico and further south. And humans and endangered species are also part of the flow of illegal traffic bound for markets in the United States and beyond. But we noticed that it often seems that international treaties on trafficking are characterized by a focus on the specific items being traded, while cooperative agreements to reduce cross-border movement of illegal drugs, arms, humans, and wildlife have historically been organized bilaterally and overseen by separate law enforcement agencies. And so, with evidence pointing to the fact that the flow of trafficked goods, people, and animals in the region is highly integrated, we thought it could be useful to explore analysis and recommendations regarding ways to improve cooperation among governments, international technical agencies, civil society groups, and researchers working to address the diverse and complex security threats trafficking poses. So the goals of this meeting today are to raise awareness of the relationships among flows of trafficked arms, drugs, humans, and wildlife, identify similarities and differences in the business of drug, arms, human, and wildlife trafficking, evaluate the role of international organized crime in regional trafficking processes, consider the role of trade policy and technical developments in influencing trafficking flows, identify challenges and opportunities for addressing security concerns and promoting cooperation, and articulate recommendations for enhanced cooperation to mitigate the social, political, and economic threats posed by trafficking in Mesoamerica. So today we have a wonderful lineup of speakers with broad experience working with trafficking issues in Central America, Mexico, and the United States. And over the course of four panels, they will consider the following questions. What is the history and current context of trafficking? In what context do the diverse flows of trafficked goods, animals, and people overlap, and why? How does trafficking of humans, drugs, arms, and wildlife affect bilateral and regional relationships? What international treaties and agreements structure governments' work on these issues? What is the role of trade agreements, immigration law, and other legal instruments in promoting or fostering trafficking? What is the role that civil society groups and the media can play in identifying, monitoring, and raising awareness about the diverse forms of illegal trade? And what are the opportunities for greater regional and intersectoral cooperation on overlapping trafficking and law enforcement issues? And during the lunchtime session, we will be fortunate to welcome David Johnson, Assistant Secretary of State for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, as our keynote speaker. So I hope that you will stay for all five sessions. Now, before I introduce the speakers on the first panel, I would like to mention that we are very grateful to the Open Society Institute for its support of this project. And I would like to thank my colleagues, Peter DeShazo, Director of the Americas Program, and Taylor Giardino, Program Coordinator, as well as the rest of the Americas Program staff for their tireless effort in organizing this event. Now, the first panel will focus on the social, political, and economic implications of trafficking in the region. It's my pleasure to introduce Raul Benitez, Professor at the Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, Ana Hidalgo, Coordinator of the Counter-Trafficking Unit of the International Organization for Migration, based in Costa Rica, and Adrian Reuter, Country Representative in Mexico of TRAFIC, the Wildlife Traffic Monitoring Program, or the Wildlife Trade Monitoring Program, of the World Conservation Union and the World Wildlife Fund. Since you have a document with the speaker bios, I won't dwell on their many accomplishments and qualifications here, so that we can get straight to the presentations and have plenty of time afterwards for additional comments and questions from the audience. And for those of you who wish, there is interpretation equipment outside, and you're welcome to go pick that up. You can see in the back the channels for translation into English is channel 5, and translation into Spanish is channel 6. So feel free to pick up that translation equipment as you need it. And I will turn to Professor Benitez. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Bliss. Deseo agradecer a la profesora Catherine Bliss la presentación.
I would like to thank Catherine Bliss for the invitation of meeting with the CSIS. The panel is titled The Social, Political, and Economic Implications of Organized Crime and Trafficking in Mesoamerica. That would be the strip in the south of Mexico from the Isthmus of Tehuantepec to Costa Rica and Panama. I'd like to begin my presentation by addressing some geopolitical issues in the Mexico and Central America region. This Mexico was separated from Central America in the 70s, and Mexico saw the increase of guerrilla movements as a threat to its national security, and then it participated in the political processes to improve peace. And later on, organized crime is also a matter of national security that appears for the first time. When it comes to the human trafficking, this is an old business of organized crime in Mexico and Central America, that it's about 30 years old, since the 70s. I will not dwell on migration, however. Currently, there are 6 criminal organizations in Mexico that operate throughout the country, and there is a drugs come from the south, weapons come from the north, and this put an end to an era related to the AK-47, FAL, M-16, the weapons used by civilian groups, paramilitary groups, and guerrilla movements, and these are weapons purchased in the U.S., starting in 2000, that were purchased by Colombian and Mexican criminal organizations and that are used for this traffic. So we have drugs and weapons trafficking. We have the Gulf cartel with its that reaches out to the south. It has links with the Zetas. And the Gulf cartel, we have information that they interchangeably are called Gulf and Zeta cartel, depending on how these organizations are formed and operate. And they operate in Guatemala, Salvador, and Honduras. And there's also the Sinaloa cartel, the Beltrans, and they have a presence also in Guatemala. The trafficking routes towards the U.S., we have information that is conflicting. Some say that up to 70% of the cocaine is coming in through the Pacific, replacing the Caribbean route. I was in the Dominican Republic 3 weeks ago, and the head of narcotics was saying that the cocaine flow through the Dominican Republic has decreased substantially through land and sea, and it was not due to an increase in seizures. And he believes that cocaine is now moving to the Pacific. If we look at the Mérida initiative, the emphasis on the equipment for the Mexican Navy are the airplanes, the 235s. And there is a debate whether it should be 2 or 4 planes, because the State Department wishes to add planes to this package, and the information is not clear. It would be to intercept cocaine in the area of the Pacific to prevent it from coming to the states of Chiapas, Guerrero, Michoacán, and Sinaloa. The Mexican Navy is seizing cocaine on sea, and there is there are also people that are coming from Ecuador and they have been intercepted. In the case of drug trafficking, the drug traffickers are opening operation centers in Central America. And this has to do with the operations that are the intercepting operations. They have to cross by land, especially along the Petén. The drug trafficking cartels in Central America, according to information that is cross-referenced, this comes from the press and it may not be completely reliable, but there is no other source. The information that comes from the U.S., the DEA, State Department, Pentagon, or South Command, it's all disparaging. So in Central America, there is a presence from different cartels, as you can see on the slide. And Golfo Zeta has a presence in Guatemala, Sinaloa, and the Juarez cartel. And the Central American cartels have become intermediary importers between Colombia and Mexico, Copan from Honduras, Santa Barbara, those are the main ones in Guatemala. The Colombians have a presence in Valle del Norte, Cali, and Medellin. The Mexicans in several throughout the country, and in Central America in the northern corner. Now, let's look at how this has affected the use in the region. This is important. The use of marijuana has increased significantly in the last 15 years. We can see how the use of marijuana has increased in Belize, Costa Rica. It has decreased in El Salvador. In the U.S., the statistics are similar. Production may be domestic. Guatemala has increased. Honduras has decreased. Mexico has decreased. And for Panama, we don't have any previous data. For opiates, we have no information for Belize. Costa Rica, no information. Salvador, decreased. U.S. increase. This illustrates the importance of the Sinaloa cartels. They produce opiates. In Honduras, it has increased. Mexico is similar. No information for the other countries. And let's look at the use of cocaine that has increased drastically in Belize, Costa Rica, Mexico, Panama. It has decreased in Honduras and Guatemala. And this means that Belize, Costa Rica, Panama, and Mexico are the main receivers of Colombian cocaine, and those that may not be able to export it because they are intercepted by land and sea, they are trying to generate local markets. Now, what amphetamines in the U.S. and in El Salvador have increased significantly. They come from China, and El Salvador is the main Central American port for deliveries from Asia, and so is Mexico, the port of Manzanillo. And this is where the drugs come in and are redistributed. Now, let's talk about seizures. They have all increased across the board. If we look at cocaine, it has increased significantly, so has cannabis. Opiates went up and remain constant. And after the capture of the Chinese Zhigong, the use of amphetamines has decreased because of that. Now, despite the fact that seizures have increased, use has decreased, and violence is associated to the drug cartels, and this associated violence means for the public opinion a lack of governance, and this is where it's most apparent is in Mexico. The political effect of drug-related violence is causing lack of governance because the social and political sectors are demanding a decrease in violence from the government, not specifically the seizure of cocaine, but rather a decrease in violence because this generates a perceived lack of control by the Mexican government. Now, let's look at weapons. They come in through Texas, where more than 50% of the armed trafficking is concentrated because there is free sale of weapons. The U.S. recognizes this failure, but there are many legal obstacles to enforce a control. And it is difficult to secure the border. The custom system in Mexico cannot handle more than 50% of the shipments, so the vulnerabilities of this system in the borders is taken advantage of to sell the weapons in Mexico. In the case of Mexico, there are two cartels, the Gulf and the Michoacan family, that hold this traffic. These are new generation weapons, as you can see. The old weapons of the Civil War of Central America, those have been seized and they're not circulating, but there are new weapons. The Mexican cartels have missile launchers and anti-tank rockets, but they have not used them. That's the paradox. Now, why they have not used them, that's a good question. There are more and more seizures of similar weapons that have been seized in Mexico. Intergovernment agreements mean just that, but in the case of Mexico and Central America, I am saddened to say countries may sign any agreement, but the nations have little ability to implement them. Mexico has signed agreements with El Salvador, Guatemala, Belize, the ANSEF, working groups on border security since 2001, the TUSTA mechanism, but they do not have the institutional capacity to enforce the agreements. Assistance from the U.S. is essential through the Merida initiative that is beginning to be implemented. I cannot go into more detail on the military and police assistance on the traffic of arms. But in the case of Mexico, this is the first time that they have a substantive military package. But this may not mean a great deal if we see that, if we compare it with the one they have with Colombia, Brazil has many planes to cover the jungle. And what military airports are they going to use? There is not enough capacity to implement it. The recommendations are to increase security. This is related to governance. Police forces are not operating properly. The gangs are making it impossible. More than 70% of their capacity is devoted to gang control. And there is also corruption. Drug traffickers use the gangs only for the lower level operations. Border crossing use young people that can be captured and killed, and migrants in order to cross the with drugs, cross the borders. Now, about the cooperation between Mexico and Central America, the governments have signed everything that they could have. This goes beyond treaties. It has to do more with the ability to cooperate itself. Now, drugs are becoming a national security problem in Mexico. The intelligence services in Mexico are collapsed. Honduras obviously is collapsed. When President Micheletti said on Monday that Zelaya was in a five-star hotel in Managua when he was in Honduras, we may assume that there is no intelligence. In Nicaragua, intelligence is better. In Guatemala, is rather weak. The president doesn't have an actual control of the police and the military forces. The communication is not substantial. And in Mexico, intelligence services have not collapsed, and they are relatively strong, but on the borders, they may not be as efficient because of corruption that is well-rooted there. And that makes it difficult to control the borders, since also it is there are many mountains and forested areas.
Pass the microphone to Ana Hidalgo from the International Organization for Migration based in Costa Rica.
Bueno, buenos días. Muchas gracias a Catherine y al centro.
Good morning. I'd like to thank you very much for having us here. We were asked many important questions, and we were given very little time to answer them, so we're going to attempt to focus on some elements that we believe may be useful for the dialogue today, and above all to try to share some information that might help to clarify matters, especially with regard to my topic, which is our area of work on human trafficking. So I would say that what I'm going to share with you today is information which was produced by investigations that OIM has carried out, and information that we have been able to gather from administrative information produced by our offices, the OIM in the region. I agree with Raul when he says that human trafficking, among other crimes, is not something practical. It's not new, it's an old problem here, but nevertheless, in our region, this reality has not been one indicated in public policies, because human trafficking is a new subject with regard to the agendas to public policy, and much less so has it been treated or handled in political conversations. And this subject, the problem of human trafficking, has begun to open pathways in the society and in policies in recent years. It's important because there has been a denial on the part of some psychologists like myself, applying the terminology that we utilize to a reality in which maybe for interests or other reasons, people have wanted to deny a reality that is in existence. So within this context, producing information that will reveal the nature and characteristics of the problem is very important. We could reach some conclusions derived from all the information produced. First of all, that human trafficking is a crime that is present in all the countries of Central America and Mexico, including those where it has been believed that it's a problem that is non-existent. We might think that it's a crime that is expanding and increasing. Nevertheless, the information problem, producing information, is one of the matters that affects us the most in general terms as far as establishing comparisons from previous times to the current situation. In our region, information that we have access to, evidence, makes it clear to us that human trafficking is exploitation that is not limited to sex crimes. It's important to note this because one of the elements of disinformation or denial which is taking place currently in the region is the myth, thinking that when we talk about human trafficking, we're speaking only of trafficking for sexual purposes and exploitation in that area. We've proven that, yes, sexual exploitation of people that have been trafficked is one of the key elements, but also there is an increase in trafficking for work purposes and over-exploitation. I'd like to show you that there is a research that we have carried out in 2007 and 8, which we published this year, regarding trafficking of adult women in the Dominican Republic and Central America. It shows us that many adult women, because this was the focus of the research, were being exploited both for sexual purposes and labor purposes. There were people who, on a given day, might be slaves for domestic work or on a farm of some kind in agricultural labors, and at night they might be also exploited sexually. All of this information, this research that I'm mentioning to you, is qualitative. We carried this out in the region, and it's based on testimony provided by individuals who were subject to this. Also, the example of women who, within the context of trafficking, of human trafficking, were pregnant, they gave birth to children, and their children were immediately taken away from them and sold. So there is a creating a merchandise out of these people, all of their vulnerability is being taken advantage of. And the predomination of women in all the information that we have, it's very clear, but also we also see evidence of the increase in presence of exploitation, specifically for work of men, not just minors, but also of adult males. And this also, within the context of our countries, is a breakdown of some of the myths that are common. People often thought that trafficking only had to do with sexual exploitation, only had to do with women, but this is no longer seen as true. So we have challenges, additional challenges for our focus on the subject of trafficking that have not been included previously. For example, if we're speaking about labor-aim trafficking, there's a challenge of including other participants, other players that have not been present traditionally in our countries, the groups who are working on trafficking, the labor ministry or private industry, for example. or the challenge of what does it mean to treat victims that are adult males. Our systems, our institutional systems, do not have a response to this because the focus has been predominantly on women and minors. Very quickly, this is the summary of the research that I was referring to. I wanted to indicate to you that in this research, we had the testimony of 46 people from 7 countries. And I'd like to call your attention to the following. If you note, these victims talk about the fact that the countries where they were headed for exploitation were Guatemala, Costa Rica, and Mexico. We're speaking of a qualitative research study. We had limitations, of course, to reach certain conclusions or that are definitive, but indeed it does indicate something that has to do with what Raul was mentioning in his topic, and that is the development of regional markets and regional markets for human trafficking. So the crime is not limited just to people being recruited to be moved to the United States, as we have seen historically in practice, but also they've developed conditions in countries for the exploitation to take place in countries such as Nicaragua, Honduras, to Guatemala, from Nicaragua to Costa Rica, from all these countries to Mexico, complemented by the fact that you will note that the second number here in the cases indicated is internal or domestic trafficking. These people are being enslaved and subjected to illegal trafficking in their own countries. This is also very important. It implies a very a requirement for standards to be established. What is currently in force speaks about international human trafficking and does not reveal the reality of this other modality that we're noticing, the markets created in our own countries. The trafficking crime is usually to other countries, to the U.S., but it doesn't necessarily have to cross borders. Also speaking about exploitation, as I was mentioning, is the sense that not only are we talking about trafficking for sexual exploitation, but other types of trafficking for labor exploitation and others. This is not in the chart, but I think it's important to relate this and connect other aspects. This study clearly revealed the fact that the presence of femicide is involved in this trafficking. Many of the women who participated in this research talked about the murder or the disappearance of women who they had met in the context of exploitation, who were murdered or who just were never seen again or never heard of again. This I'm tying in because we know that in our countries, in Mexico or Guatemala, El Salvador, above all, the rate of murder of women has become one of the most serious problems that affects our population. And we believe that in one way or another, this information might confirm something that we think or sense as a hypothesis. That one of the contexts for explaining the murder of these women that do not have explanations in most of our countries many times because they're not investigated is because the murder of these women is taking place in the context, among other possibilities, in the framework of human trafficking. So I'd like to share with you some figures with regard to the Victim Assistance Program of OIM in Mexico, and above all, the fact that in the years in which this program has been attended to or has attended to victims, a large percentage of the women who have been assisted have been exploited in the labor force. This is significant in terms of what was being mentioned before. And also, I'd like to insist that these statistics barely reveal a very small portion of the problem. The people who come for victim assistance are identified by the programs are just a few. In another location where we were working, for each person that we were able to have contact with in OIM who told their story, who, with regard to trafficking, mentioned that when I left the country, there were 10 of us, for example, or in the place where we were, there were at least this number, 30 people, other girls. So we only have an estimate of the prevalence of this problem. The program for victims' assistance, victims of trafficking in the U.S. is also finding itself in the same circumstances. I have very little time, so I'd like to say that the presence of trafficking and the relationship with organized crime is clear. Although our data indicates to us that there is a trend to a interrelationship of these networks, which are not only international but national, as well as I mentioned, the family networks that exploit people in the country itself. Another topic I'd like to reveal as an important matter to discuss has to do with an increase in detecting cases and trying cases in some of the countries. If we note the following chart, some preliminary figures, and I insist that we have a lack of information, a serious one in our countries, we note that there is an increase in the cases that are in the public ministries in several of the countries in Central America with regard to human trafficking. The relationship is not with the ones who reach a level of a sentence, a jail sentence, but at least it indicates that there are good practices being established in our countries, above all with having to do with defining the crime and working in the legal framework. And organizations specialized in some of our countries in handling this, and an increase in cooperation within the institutions in our countries and also among countries. So I'd like to point this out with regard to new practices. To conclude, I would like to mention some recommendations. The need to go to the root of the problem to effectively fight crime, guarantee and provide better protection for the victims of trafficking. This is a field that is just beginning in our countries. Also, to reduce the demand with regard to public policies, in political policies, there is no suit or an ability to reduce the demand for sexual services of this sort. And this also, it's revealed in our studies that many of the authorities tolerate this. And this limits, on one hand, they facilitate the commission of the crime and also limit the persecution of the crime. So prevention is very important. I won't have time to talk about this, but it has to do with the relationship between migration, trafficking, and the trade of people. Extra-regional migration has been increased. The flow has increased coming from Asia and Africa. These migratory flows, this traffic of people, generates a vulnerability which adds to the local and regional problems that we have with regard to human trafficking, and also sets a challenge to all of our countries to how to handle this new migratory dynamic, in light of which policies and the statement of OIM is that we in our countries are in need of developing programs that are stimulate the protection of all migrants in general. It's very difficult in this context where the flow is massive. Sometimes it's 50 to 100 people who are migrating. It's hard to separate the ones that are victims of trafficking and which are being exploited, which need more protection than others. And in the end, I would like to mention an alternative which would be more holistic with regard to protecting the entire migrant population. I'll stop here. Thank you very much.
Traffic, the office in Mexico.
Thank you. As mentioned, Traffic is a joint wildlife trade monitoring program.
Es un programa mixto para la conservación. Quisiera garantizar.
Threat to the conservation of nature. Over the past 9 years, I've had the pleasure to work with this organization, mostly in Mesoamerica, and really appreciate the opportunity and invitation to share some of what we have learned in this relevant forum. It is important to mention that in the context of our work and this presentation, wildlife trade refers to the sale and exchange of animal and plant resources. This ranges from trade in live plants and animals, their parts and derivatives, to trade in timber and fisheries, as well as other products. Being the international trade of wildlife a huge business, worth billions of dollars per year, as can be seen in the slide, and involving hundreds of millions of plants and animals globally, it is not surprising that illegal activities are commonplace, particularly when it comes to highly valued and sought-after products such as tropical timbers or rare and endangered species, parts and derivatives for very specific markets, such as collectors or those looking for traditional remedies or charms from endangered plants and animals. Illegal wildlife trade involves the illicit procurement, transport and distribution, both within and between nations, of plant and animal specimens, in contravention of laws, foreign and domestic, and treaties, and can range in scale from single-item local bartering to multi-ton commercial-size consignments shipped all over the world. Wildlife contraband may include live pets, hunting trophies, fashion accessories, cultural artifacts, ingredients for traditional medicines, wild meat for human consumption, and other products, some of which may be worth more than gold or narcotics by weight. Due to its low profile and a lack of sufficient systematized data on the topic, this illegal activity is extremely difficult to quantify with any accuracy. Nonetheless, one of the most commonly heard estimates is that it could potentially be worth around $20 billion annually, making it among the most lucrative illicit economies in the world, along with the other topics to be discussed in the agenda of today's seminar, such as drugs, guns, and human trafficking. Developing countries with rich biological diversity are usually found to be among the most important source countries of wildlife exports, both legal and illegal, which, added to weak governance and poor law enforcement capacity in many cases, makes them particularly vulnerable to the illegal wildlife trade and its consequences. Mesoamerica, which is considered a biodiversity hotspot, encompasses a wide variety of ecosystems, including some of the most diverse forests in the world and a large variety of plant and animal species. This region supports 7% of the Earth's species with a biological corridor that plays a vital role in the maintenance of long-term evolutionary processes in the Western Hemisphere. However, much of the biodiversity is under threat due to a combination of factors such as a high population growth, unplanned development, as well as unsustainable and illegal exploitation of natural resources. A recent survey undertaken by Traffic in 5 countries in Central America, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, and Costa Rica, and supported by the Department of State of the U.S. under the CAFTA-DR framework, identified some of the most traded species in and from the region, some of which are shown in the slide, but also the fact that illicit activities on this front range from a few individuals of plants or animals occasionally sold by locals on the roadsides to larger and more organized operation involving several individuals and significant numbers of illegal wildlife specimens. There are, of course, legal exports that contribute significantly to both the economy of the countries and livelihoods of people. which can be exemplified by around 250,000 tilancia plants or 225,000 live green iguanas or 100,000 Cayman leather products exported to the EU over a one-year period recently from 05 to 06. Although it might not be well known, there is ample evidence to show a strong link between organized crime and wildlife crime, with some indicators that illustrate this, like the ones listed in the slide. In addition, the general perception is that there is a low probability of being punished when committing illegal activities related to wildlife. Even if someone were caught, the strict sanctions according to the law are usually not applied. Given this situation, there is little deterrent to stop illegal practices and a huge incentive to continue or undertake these criminal activities given the potential financial benefits and low risks involved. As in many other parts of the world, in Mesoamerica, wildlife specimens are often smuggled through three primary methods: hidden in secret compartments of luggage, shipping containers, or clothing, mis-declared on customs forms and trade permits by fraudulently identifying look-alike, non-protected species, changing the declared number of items shipped, changing the declared value of items, or declaring wild species as captive bred species, or trafficked using forged or stolen trade permits to give the false impression that the contents are being legitimately traded. Authorities in the region are aware of this and recognize the existing resource limitations of different levels prevent an effective enforcement of the law. Those are marine turtle eggs, by the way, in the picture. Consequently, related threats of wildlife illicit trade, which are of major importance for source, transit, and import countries, are current, with limited capacity to be detected and addressed. Potential environmental harms continue, such as the reduction of biodiversity, disruption of ecosystems by introducing non-native species, or falling into an imbalance by excessive loss of particular species in demand, or the transmission of disease. This can have enormous social and economical impacts to countries and localities involved, thus undermining people's security as it impacts livelihoods and cultural traditions and leads to displacement, civil strife, and community discontent. In the particular case of the Mesoamerican Biological Corridor, a potential loss of connectivity could also be worth mentioning. Even though connectivity is usually perceived through vegetation cover images, such as the one on the upper left in the slide, several species are responsible to maintain the integrity of the corridor, such as insects, mammals, and birds, many of which are threatened by unsustainable and/or illegal trade. If these species disappear, even if healthy environments exist in appearance, it could be a prelude to connectivity loss and fragmentation of such areas. But illegal wildlife trade should not only be seen in isolation. As mentioned, it might involve big criminal operations, such as the smuggling of over 260,000 pounds of illegal conch meat from the Caribbean into the US and Canada between 2004 and 2006, with several actors involved, but can also be linked to other types of trafficking, such as gun or drug smuggling. To exemplify this, we can mention a couple of cases, such as the seizure of nearly 20 kilograms of liquid cocaine hidden in a shipment of live exotic fish by U.S. customs officials in Miami in 2004. This shipment contained triple-lined plastic bags containing the fish. The inner bags were filled with fish and water, but the middle linings held the yellowish liquid cocaine. Seizure or the seizure of more than a ton of cocaine stuffed inside frozen sharks just last June. In this case, more than 20 shark carcasses filled with slabs of cocaine in the southern Mexico state of Yucatan. Trafficking of plant and animal specimens from wild origin in Mesoamerica, as can be seen, is an existing crime and threat by itself, but has also been found to be linked to other organized criminal activities. And it is thus important to identify existing gaps among the managers, decision makers, and enforcers in order to address this and improve the chances of stopping the illegal trade in wildlife. Largely based on a wildlife trade control gap analysis in CAFTA DR countries undertaken by TRAFFIC recently, some relevant conclusions to the topic of interest presented and applicable to the region are the need to clarify government agencies' responsibilities regarding wildlife management, a lack of which results in undermined collaboration and loss of opportunity to develop synergies towards improved implementation of legal frameworks, which also shows within agencies in a disconnect between the central authorities and the regional and local ones. There is generally a lack of coordination and collaboration between enforcement agencies in Central American countries. The existing tendency for individual enforcers and agencies to work in isolation causes a lack in information, teamwork, and strength in joint operations that could actually disrupt the criminal networks, thus making it necessary to develop some structure to improve and promote regional cooperation on transboundary wildlife law enforcement operations and information sharing. Additional equipment and resources for enforcement and regulation are needed, such as vehicles, radios, animal handling equipment, fuel, internet access, digital cameras, identification materials, to perform their duties in an efficient and effective way. There is a clear need to improve the capacities of enforcement authorities. If training is lacking or insufficient, even if additional staff would be available, it is improbable that performance would improve. The judiciary needs to understand the poaching of that poaching of wildlife for trade is theft, and it is not only theft of sovereign resources, but also from the people that rely on it and need it to be sustained. It can be difficult to obtain strict sentences or harsh penalties if judges are not aware of the critical status of many traded species or do not view wildlife crimes with the same sense of severity as other criminal activity. Enhanced political will is also needed, of course, to achieve what has been mentioned and to provide greater resources for wildlife enforcement and management. During the past few years, TRAFIC has worked in Mexico and Central America to contribute to solutions for some of these issues through the development of training and reference materials, implementation of multi-agency workshops, outreach efforts, donation of equipment, as well as research, information, and analysis to support decision-making, wildlife-related policies, and strategies development. The response from authorities in the region has been very positive, and we have been fortunate to be working in partnership with governments and key authorities in Mesoamerica who appreciate the support and embrace this collaboration. Mexico, particularly, is a relevant global hub for wildlife trade in its way to key consumer markets like the US, Europe, or Asia. But this country is also a major consumer, manufacturer, and exporter of wildlife products from other regions, exotic skin luxury items being one example. TRAFIC, in this case, has signed an MOU with PROFEPA, the Attorney General for the Protection of the Environment, and significant advances towards the strengthening of capacity have been achieved. But resources are very limited, and identified capacity gaps and needs along the region ask for the strengthening and expansion of efforts so as to guarantee a positive impact in the long term. Wildlife trading from Mesoamerica is big business and is poised to increase between the Mesoamerican countries and consumer regions such as North America or Europe through free trade agreements. It is important to support the region to ensure that liberalization of trade does not increase opportunities for illegal and unsustainable trade in wildlife. For example, helping to improve the implementation of Mesoamerican countries' legal frameworks as well as compliance with existing international agreements such as CITES, or helping develop tools and structures to promote regional collaboration towards a coordinated approach against wildlife trafficking. All of these efforts would contribute to the conservation and sustainability of one of the Mesoamerica's main heritages and wealth, its biodiversity. Finally, I would like to thank the governments of Mexico, Central America, and the U.S. for their support and collaboration in our regional efforts, and, of course, the CSIS for the invitation to be here.
Thank you, Adrián. We have time for a few questions.
Tenemos ahora tiempo para algunas preguntas. Hay micrófonos si tienen preguntas.
Let's hear this morning. Yes, in the back, please. Just if you would wait for the microphone and speak into it, make sure it's turned on, and say your name and affiliation, please.
Hi, my name is Kristen Bourguignon. I'm from INL, State Department. I did come in a little late, but I was wondering why you believe that there is a connection between organized crime and wildlife trafficking. Have there been arrests, or what evidence do you have that this is happening?
Well, I mentioned a little bit about that, but it's there's a connection that exists. There are many billions of dollars involved in wildlife trade international. That makes it a big incentive for criminal networks to address wildlife as one of their potential income sources, and many species, as mentioned, for example, rhino horn, are worth more than narcotics or gold. So that's also a big incentive, because they can have a lot of benefits, financial benefits, trafficking wildlife with a low probability of being sanctioned, and usually there are more lax control and monitoring by authorities on the illegal threat. And these are organized networks. They have they involve many actors at many levels. There is planning, there are trade routes, and in many cases it's exactly the same people who are trading with drugs and guns who also trade with wildlife using exactly the same routes. Yes, one perfect example could be caviar. Caviar, as you well know, is very expensive. It's many thousands of dollars a pound in some cases, and that has involved organized crime in eastern countries for many years now.
Are there other questions from the floor? Yes, back here in the back. Please take a microphone.
Adrian, in terms of illegal timber trade, it's one of the areas you didn't mention, but I know has also been associated with other types of activities. Do you have any kind of estimate of what the value in Mesoamerica of illegal timber trade is at this point in time?
Could you please just say your name and affiliation?
It's Andix, USAID.
Okay. Unfortunately, I cannot give you any good estimates, because it's a very low-profile activity, even though timber trade is huge. There is a lot of corruption involved, as we do know that. There are large shipments of timber, precious timber, mahogany, cedar, and other species that are being traded internationally, but there are no good estimates. But it is an ongoing problem. There are many actors involved, some of which are within governments, within authorities, and that causes a big problem to have good estimates on what is really going on.
We have time for one more question. Do we have a question for Professor Benitez or Professor Hidalgo? Yes, please, here in the back. Please wait for the microphone, please.
Hi. Susan Ginsberg from the Migration Policy Institute. All three of you discussed corruption, and I'm wondering, Professor Manaut, what your views on what to do about corruption is, in the context of these major problems and the vast amounts of money that are available.
Well, la corrupción.
Corruption, at least the studies that are available in Mexico are based on triangles. On the top angle is the government, and then we have the base. Depending on the type of government agency in Mexico, Guatemala, Salvador, and Honduras, corruption goes higher or lower. In the case of Mexico, at the Migration Institute, it is estimated that corruption starts at the state delegates. They have authority to grant visas, and they have control of the officials at the field offices and at the border sites. Within the army and the navy, there is base level corruption, the officials at the checkpoints. At the armed forces, corruption more difficult for corruption to go higher. At the federal police, it exists at an intermediary level, and not all institutions have corrupt officials in them. But when it ends up permeating the whole institution. The Center for Intelligence and National Security in Mexico in the last 20 years has not had any corruption case uncovered. At the Mexican Navy, the captain con-
the checks at the level of the captain level, they are very stringent, and so the level of corruption is uneven.
Wonderful presentation.